Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time for the baseball podcast on location. Well, one of us is on location. The other is in my basement, and that's me. So coming to you live from Mesa, Arizona, is Bally Sports senior MLB writer David Brown.
Ho, Cam. How you doing, Andy?
I've never been better. So I hear the weather
is cold in Arizona.
Beautiful in Arizona, yeah. But how cold is cold?
It was 40 degrees.
Oh, that's cold.
Before the sun came up.
That qualifies. Fine. I will have sympathy for you. Sports writers, sometimes I worry. Yeah, it's 58 degrees. Well, tough shit. Put a jacket on. But 40, that's it. And rainy, right? It's also rained?
Yeah. There was yesterday, it was monsoon looking, and there was a little bit of rain a couple days earlier, and people drive absolutely, let's just say, too conservatively. Yeah. Yesterday, I mean, it was coming down. It was bad. It was, you know, getting ready for a flood kind of rain, and made my day go a little slower and take a little longer. But I'm got the luckiest job in the world, or I'm the luckiest job in the world. I don't know. I'm very happy that I have an opportunity to do this. It's fun for the most part.
It was raining so hard, the Cubs were putting prospects on the arc two at a time. So who have you seen? What teams have you seen so far?
I feel like I've seen the Padres every day. I've seen them way too much. But I've seen first day I was here, I saw Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, very nice.
And the Angels against the Oakland Athletics. And before he took off for Japan and the WBC, I've seen the Rangers and the Dodgers, and today the Mariners and the Padres again. And I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody so far, but yeah, it's a lot of doubles. It's like baseball cards, a lot of doubles. But there's 15 teams, and I'm sure I'm eventually going to get to most of them.
So. Yeah, 'cause you're only halfway through your trip to Arizona.
Yeah.
So that's good. Did you see Shohei? Did he actually play in a game, or you just saw him, you know, playing catch, and or was he just working?
I did. I saw Shohei pitch.
Oh, nice.
He did not DH as well, so I was like, "What the heck?"
Yeah.
There were at least 40 credited writers from Japan there, and I don't think that even counts the photographers. It was crazy. It was Shohei versus Shintaro, who is a good pitcher over in Japan and over with, and now with the A's for at least this year. He doesn't hit like Shohei. He's like a, you know, a 110 hitter or something in Japan, so we're not that excited about having him DH. But that might actually be a good hitter on the A's, so maybe they'll do that.
Yeah. You'll have to hit cleanup if he's at 110.
Right. I might be exaggerating a little bit. I don't think he's quite that bad, but it's not good. But he had a nice debut, and I did write about it. Sometimes the stories are a little hard to find on the Bally website, but I had a nice interview as my boss at the AP, my former boss at the AP 25 years ago, Rick Gano, would say, "Hey, why don't you go out and talk to some yahoos about Sammy Sosa?" And so I talked to some nice people from Southern California, from Anaheim, who actually were from Mexico and emigrated here when they were 17. And they were wearing Shohei jerseys, and the lady in the couple had Ohtani in Japanese with the kanji characters in the back. That's a little different take on things. And there were, you know, dozens and dozens of people there with jerseys, and not too many had them like this. And I asked her about it, and she said, you know, it's it was kind of a show of support to him, you know, as a person who's an immigrant and not an English speaker first. She thought that he kind of got a bad rap. I guess it was mostly from Stephen A. Smith, but it was from, you know, there are some people out there that don't think he should be or can be the face of the game because he's not from here and he doesn't do, you know, interviews in English and so forth. And she's like, you know, baseball's a world game, and there's players from all over the planet in MLB, and Shohei's really perfect kind of example for everyone to set. So it was a nice little, you know, I thought she had a good take on it, and it was, you know, a nice civics lesson too that I think people could learn once in a while. So that was the fun story.
Even for Stephen A., that was just a ridiculous take. You know, if you're the best at something,
you know, right,
you're not penalized by doing it in your second language. So, so has anybody, have you looked at a player and been like, ooh, who's this guy? He looks good. Anybody like made an impression on you so far?
Yeah. Strangely enough, Teoscar Hernandez looks really good for the Mariners. You know, he's maybe their third best player or whatever, but he was stinging the ball and making really good plays in right field. And you know what's impressive is I think with some of these guys, just how this might seem like a silly thing, but one of the most impressive things to me that ball players can do is that long toss where they throw it 80 feet and they don't move and the guy's sticking his glove out and he hits it.
Yeah.
I just think that's, you know, I know they're pros and we should expect this, I guess. But to me, you know, it's like the ultimate like grand prize bozo in the bucket game. It's just incredible amount of accuracy. And, you know, I noticed this in regular season games and they're doing it in spring training. I just thought that was really neat that, you know, they're able to hit the glove like that. That's not even always outfielders who are doing it. So it's impressive. The thing about spring training that if people ever get a chance to go is you get closer than you do at the major league games. It's just a little more intimate. You can see them, you know, do their thing right up close. And it's really a unique experience and take that everybody should try and do once if they can afford it.
Yeah, I agree. I've been to several. Was hoping to get out there this year to get a nice close look at Eric Hosmer grounding out to second base. But I'll have to wait to see him do it in the big leagues, I guess. So when you go out to do this, how many hours are you spending at the park? Do you get out early to see stuff and then stay for the game?
It's a good question. The schedule is a little different than major league and you kind of a regular season, and you have to get used to that. They start so damn early. Like this morning, the Mariners clubhouse is a little different, I think, than other clubhouses. They the access is much more restrictive these days than it was even 10 years ago, you know, for baseball writers. And the Mariners were open at 7 in the morning. So, you know, usually you're looking at the earliest is going to be like 9:15, 9:45, depending on what time the game starts in a day game situation. And a lot of times the players will come in even later than that, but 7 o'clock, and you know, they come in, and at least today, you know, started working maybe about 8, and would, you know, they go out to their stations and they do some batting or fielding drills or, you know, working out, whatever. It is a little bit like during the regular season. You know, they have batting practice and pitchers and catchers will be warmed up in the bullpen. And it's neat because you can go out to the different stations and see the pitchers doing their thing, or you can go up on the field to batting practice up to a certain point. They don't want you to go on to on the grass, so they try and keep you off that. But it just depends on what you want. You know, the manager probably will speak an hour into the event. You can go into the clubhouse for a while and talk to the players. You can go see them practicing outside pretty much up until 1 o'clock in the game. So there's 4 or 5 hours of stuff going on before the first pitch of the game. And it's kind of funny. You know, in a lot of cases, you can talk to the starting pitcher who comes out of the game, and he goes into the clubhouse and the game is going on still. So, you know, it's an exhibition game, so you don't really care that much if you're missing stuff. So it's just a little bit of a different animal than regular season baseball.
But you're saying that they wouldn't let you like go out and shag fly balls during batting practice like little kids at the home run derby? They frown on that?
Oh, you know what I saw today? Yeah, speaking of those things, Ichiro in full practice uniform at the Mariners, shagging fly balls in a random batting practice day for them. It's like it was very neat to see Ichiro. He's in Ichiro shape,
yeah.
So very trim and very gray, if not white, on his hair. But I don't know if he doesn't have anywhere to go or anything else to do, but he's out there still. It's like he's a fantasy camper, but it's kind of like that. And it's neat to have him around, but I just wonder if, you know, he's about my age. So I think he was born in 72 or 3. If he's just kind of sad that he can't play anymore and this is as close as he can get, then I don't know that to be the fact, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, he's born in October of 73.
Okay.
He's 49. He didn't have a very long career. He only played professional baseball for 27 seasons, when you include the Japanese league. So,
That's sounds impossible to play that long, but Edgar Martinez was there. All the great, we didn't see Randy Johnson, but Dan Wilson, Barrington's own Dan Wilson.
Yeah.
He's an instructor in spring training. So it was like old baseball card day with the Mariners. So they bring back their old people and they hang around. They also have a dog.
Oh, they do.
They have a rescue dog, kind of a firehouse dog, a clubhouse dog named Tucker. Scott Service's wife is really into rescuing animals and that industry, basically. And they have a guy who it slipped my mind what he does, if he's the traveling secretary or something to that effect. And he's got a dog in his office, and I played fetch with it today. And he's very Tucker is very, I think he's 4 years old, and he is a rescue, as I said. So it's kind of a little bit of a paradox or a contradiction, because he's pretty skittish, and there's, you know, a million huge baseball players around, and lots of strange media people coming in and out, and they're different people every day. So I think he's got a little bit of anxiety that it probably will take years to ease. But, you know, he actually barked at me a little bit. And I felt bad because I consider myself like, you know, a friend to all dogs, if only they would just know that. And but he chilled out, and his human gave me a tennis ball, and I threw it down the hallway a bunch of times and got to pet him a little bit. And, you know, that's what I mean when I say it's a privilege. It's very odd and weird that a baseball team has a dog, and, you know, I got to meet it. So I'm very happy with that. It made my day.
We had one of our rescues was a very skittish dog when we first got her. She was 2.
Yeah.
She's 9 now. When you couldn't even, like, you could not walk up to her and pet her without her, like, she would circle around and then come back and go, okay, now you can pet me. Like, you couldn't just reach down. She wouldn't let you do it. She would get herself situated. Then she would like you to pet her, but you couldn't. That dog now, I was telling you that we had a couple of days last week where we didn't have any power, and it got very cold, and I woke up, and she was completely sprawled across me, using me for her heating pad. So she got over her skittishness. But I understand that.
It's a golden, if I didn't mention, it's a golden retriever, Air Bud-ish.
Oh, nice. Dog.
Yes.
So one thing that you can't help but notice when you watch these spring training games on TV, and I'm wondering what it's like in person, is the ever-present pitch clock.
Yes.
And the kind of effects intended, and well, I guess they're all intended, but things you might think of that are going to affect the game and then things that you're kind of surprised. I think we all knew just the basic idea that it's pitchers got to throw the ball within, pitch the ball within 20 seconds with nobody on, or 20 seconds, yeah, with nobody on base. Or is it the opposite? You get more time. So 20 seconds with a base runner, 15 seconds if nobody's on. The part I don't think, I know I certainly didn't think of, is this thing of where the batter has to be set 8 seconds, with at least 8 seconds on the clock.
I didn't know about that before. I did not realize that detail before I saw these games.
But being set, the umpires are basically taking it as be in the box and looking at the pitcher. Like Eric Hosmer, the aforementioned Eric Hosmer got an automatic strike today. He's in the box, he's set, but he's looking at the ground. He hadn't looked up at the pitcher, and he got a strike call there. He didn't seem to care. It's spring training. It was strike two. It was very quickly strike three after that. He just kind of laughed. But that seems a little not informal. I don't know the word I'm looking for. Like that whole the bat determining how the if when the batter is ready seems a little too ambiguous to me.
Subjective?
Yes.
I don't know.
Is this, hey, next year we're going to have, the umps aren't going to be calling balls and strikes. We got to give them something to do so they can stare at the hitter and see if they think he's ready?
Well, I think the players look at it like this, that, you know, they have a month or so to iron these kinks out and to, you know, I don't know if they're going to go looking for trouble as far as borrowing trouble, as far as worrying about how the Joe West impulses of umpires might take over at some point. It might be adversarial in that way. I think they're kind of just crossing their fingers that it's something that people will get used to, like other rule changes. And by the time opening day comes, we're not going to have too many situations like that. I think that's at least what they hope.
So I guess we can't. I mean, we'll know better when, obviously, they do this in the big... Where do we think the clocks are going to be in the big league parks? Because apparently, like the one on the backstop in the spring training parks, they said, is more in is more like in the TV shot than it's actually going to be in the big league parks. They're going to move it over. They're going to try to keep it out of the basic behind-the-pitcher shot.
You know, I've heard, but I don't know if this is actually going to be true, but I've heard people have been asking this question. And, you know, I've seen a couple games where, you know, you can't see it behind home plate and they have to put it in the score bug and it's going to be somewhere else in the ballpark. I don't know if there's like a standard place. I mean, that it has to be somewhere that, you know, the pitcher can see it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be something that we're going to be able to see on that typical shot from behind the pitcher.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on how the games are produced, you know, the TV show itself. So yeah. I don't know. It's, you know, the whole 8 seconds thing seems arbitrary, and, you know, defining what set is seems arbitrary, and Colton Wong, our Cardinals friend, had a good idea. He's a couple things. He kind of thinks that maybe hitters should get that walk-up time back, and it shouldn't necessarily be as tight as other pitches in the sequence. Not only that, but because so we can play the entire more of the walk-up song. You know, he's serious because it's I don't know, just part of the habit and the routine and the aesthetic that we've kind of gotten used to there. So I thought that was a good suggestion, but...
No, that does make sense. You know, it can basically start the first pitch of the at-bat. The timer starts basically when the batter starts to get in the box. That's when we're going to fire that up. And then we'll run it like they've been running it on every subsequent pitch. Marquee is one of the channels that has the pitch clock in the scorebug. And it's annoying as hell. I don't know why we need it. I don't know why we need to see it. I thought the whole idea was it's just to keep the game moving. And if there's a violation, then the announcers can tell us. Like right now, while we're recording this, I'm looking up, there's SNY. There's a game on from earlier today on MLB Network. And they're doing the annoying, like the play clock at a football game. They have an actual shot of it. Like the camera is pointed at it, and they have a little box next to the scorebug with the. It's like, I don't need that. It's like, if they're doing it just for spring training to like get us used to it, that's fine. But once the season starts, I don't want to see the damn clock. Just speed the game up, and I'll just watch the game. I don't need to, you know.
I'd like to think that that's where it's going. You know, like you, I think you were saying, maybe a little of this is the people who are producing the games thinking that the fans are curious about seeing it. And, but it's, you know, I think for like people at the game, depending on where you sit in the ballpark, because I was thinking about this during the game watching Logan Gilbert pitch for the Mariners, and I couldn't see, I was in the stands for some things. You know, there's a press box, there's a kind of a little bitty press box, and you can go if it's not sold out, and most games aren't, you can go in the stands and sit and watch and get a different vantage. It's kind of a cool way to watch the game. And I was thinking about the pitch clock and how I couldn't see it, and I kind of, after a while, forgot about it. Yeah. So, which is sort of what you were saying about how you kind of want to watch the game and take it in without having it there. And I think, you know, I think it's, and it would just be a bit much for every pitch. It's not like a basketball possession, you know, where we kind of want to watch the 24-second clock or whatever it is in the NBA now. Is it 35? When was the last time it was 24? Can you tell it's been a while since I watched NBA?
It is. It's still 24.
Is it? Yeah. Or, oh, maybe I'm thinking of college.
Keeps – every few years, college laps 5 seconds off theirs.
Right.
Now it's down to 30.
No, but I think you're right. I think it's at least the idea should be to have us – everybody watching the clock less in the game with a little bit of a nudge more organically just seems like it's going quicker because of the clock. So, but we don't have to see that countdown every damn time.
Now, I do like what the score is planning during Cub baseball on the radio. While Pat is calling the game, Zach Zaidman is going to just softly say into his microphone, 20 Mississippi, 19 Mississippi, 18 Mississippi, the entire game. It's going to be great. It's especially if you have AM stereo.
I can't
stereo,
tell if you're kidding or really
you
happening.
Can actually, in AM stereo, they're just going to put him in one of the speakers. So like he'll be sitting over your right shoulder when you're driving around. You hear Zach whispering into the, and then of course doing his fake laugh every few minutes. It'll be great. I mean, I could see them maybe coming up with. You know how like when the play clock in football gets down to like 5 seconds, it all of a sudden appears on the scorebug in red. Like just do that.
Right.
If it gets down to like 4 seconds, put it up there. Then we'd be like, hurry, we've got a pitch, hurry up. But I don't need to see the rest of it. So the throw over, we talked about the new rules the last time. We talked about the throw over rule. Have you heard about this? Some teams are working on a strategy where after the pitcher has thrown over twice, they anticipate that, you know, he's out of throw. Everybody's going to treat the pitcher like John Lester then, and they're going to get this huge lead. And they're like, we're going to throw over because it's only a violation if you don't pick the runner off. So there's actual teams that will, against some base runners, will purposely, they think, they're going to purposely use their two throws to bait the dumber base runners into taking a bigger lead and going, he can't throw over here now, and then they'll throw over and pick him off. That apparently is already a strategy that some teams are thinking. I don't know. It's too bad Ronnie Cedeno isn't still around, because he'd have been a prime candidate for somebody to do that to.
Yeah.
How about the big bases? Can you notice the bigger bases from the stands?
I don't know if it's because I know they're bigger, but I feel like I can tell. I think you can. It's funny. They're not quite like clown bases, but there's a noticeable difference. It just seems there's more white, which is, you know, that's how MLB's wants to play it, I guess.
Just like the Cubs roster. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Well, I didn't think it was that big a difference until all the networks have done the hack after the first game. They show an old base and the new base. The new base is a lot bigger than the old base. It's when they're next to each other, it's noticeable. It's not as noticeable when you just look out on the field. But, I mean, they added what? They're 3 inches wider and in both directions, right? That's significantly bigger.
I think it's 14
bigger.
And a half to 18. I haven't had a chance. There's been a lot of talk, and you know, how about the pitch clock and that kind of thing with everybody. I haven't really had a chance to talk to any base stealing types. Colton Wong maybe would have been good at some point about you know, being a couple steps closer to second. There are some crazy stolen base numbers in the minor leagues with the bigger bases, so. And I don't know if that's also all, you know, the pickoff stuff and whatever, but factoring in. But, you know, you would think to some degree, you know, I don't know if we're going to get Vince Coleman and you know, Willie Wilson numbers, but I think we're going to see more of that, which is fun. It's, you know, the stolen base is kind of been taken out of the game because it's not a really high percentage play, and all the analytics guys, you know, discourage it, and it's hard on the body and all that. So, you know, Mike Trout doesn't really run anymore, and they tell Julio Rodriguez to cool it because he's running too much or running into the wall or whatever. So, but it's there'll be more opportunities. We'll see if it means actual stolen bases, but there'll be more opportunities.
Yeah, I would think an underrated asset would be if you had a guy like Javi Baez, who is a great tagger. It's going to be harder to tag because there's more base for the runner to try to get to. Just yet another reason why it'd be nice to still have Javi around for some things. That's right. I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter about that at all. So let's not worry about that. The big Cub news of the week was that last week it was a tragic tale in two parts that we were inevitable to see. Seiya Suzuki shows up to camp looking ripped. Everybody's so impressed. Spent 2 days talking about his big muscles. And then, oh, by the way, he strained his
oblique.
His oblique. Yeah. And he'll be out somewhere between 5 days and 6 months. And I felt bad for Seiya because he was so looking forward to playing in the World Baseball Classic again. And now he's got to sit in a tub in Mesa instead. Which is just too bad.
Yeah, it's a huge bummer. We can't have nice things. I might have even mentioned this before, that I have a hack theory that all this working out and all these, you know, you were joking about it, but all these muscular young men, you know, open themselves up to things like oblique injuries. Maybe they called it something different when, you know, Al Kaline was playing right field, but I never heard of that word, you know, and maybe even in the '90s. So
he
got muscles on top of muscles.
Al had a stitch in his side.
Yes.
Lingered for a month. What did you go swimming too soon after you ate lunch? Is that what happened?
Right.
Yeah, I'll be out for a month. Well, I wasn't really joking. It's funny, when I first saw him, I thought, uh-oh, right. I don't think this is going to go well, because we've seen it, and it's like, oh, no, and it didn't. Yeah, it's kind of the old, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, is it? The rise of, you know, training and getting yourself in better shape causes more injuries, or is it the the rise in medical, like, in just kind of the science of training and what we understand about the body, we just diagnose stuff more accurately than we used to. Some guys probably played through some stuff where it's like, oh God, you probably shouldn't have done that. So it's probably a little of both.
Yeah.
Some of the exercises, getting in shape, working different parts of your body that maybe look great but might not be all that functional for baseball, can lend you to getting injured more often. But it also could be that guys don't try to play through, you know, injuries that in the old days they would have, and then turn it into something worse. I don't know.
You know, that sounds reasonable enough. Yes.
Yeah, you know, it was the old. Though they didn't even have Tommy John, you know. Nobody right. tore an ulnar collateral ligament back before the Tommy John surgery. It's like, oh no, they did. Those were guys who you look at their baseball card, and they pitched 308 innings one year, and they pitched 12 the next, and then you never heard of them again. Those were the guys right. who did that. They still tore that ligament. They just didn't know what it was, and they didn't know how to fix it. That didn't mean it didn't happen. Enjoy the rest of your time out there.
Thanks.
And then when you get back, we can do a recap of the whole trip, maybe with Wi-Fi that works. That'll be good.
Right. All right, Andy.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Many of us have herpes.